Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Smoke Jensen 53, Thunder of the Mountain Man, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, narrated by Mort Shelby and performed by a full cast.
You that notorious gunslinger they call Smoke Jensen?
The young man facing Smoke in Longmont's saloon and gambling house was a lanky, raw-boned redhead with a craggy, sunburned face made even uglier by the arrogant expression it wore. The cowboy had come into Longmont's accompanied by four somewhat older men, all of them dressed in range clothes. Smoke, who lived west of the town of Big Rock on the Sugarloaf Ranch, knew just about everybody in this lush Colorado Valley, but he didn't recognize any of them. The redneck had somehow recognized him, however, and he had stalked over to the table where Smoke was sitting peacefully having coffee with his old friend Lewis Longmont, the gambler and gunman who owned this establishment.
I've heard all about you, and I've never believed a blasted word of it. Fastest gun in the West, my hind foot. Just because you got fellas writing those yellowback novels about you, that don't mean a damn thing. I figured them drunken bums would write anything for money. The hero of American youth, ain't that what them scribblers call you?
All right, I'm Smoke Jensen. What of it?
I'm faster than you, Jensen, and I'm willing to prove it once and for all right here and now.
I don't have any interest in killing you today, son. I'd just as soon you didn't make me do it.
What you mean is that you want to weasel out of drawing against me, Jensen.
Smoke had never been the sort of man to carve notches in his gun butts, which was a good thing because by now he'd have just about whittled them down to nothing. He didn't keep track of the number of men he'd killed, and he didn't lose any sleep over them either. Every man he'd pulled the trigger on hadn't given him any choice. But this kid's overbearing self-confidence wasn't any reason for him to die. If he'd just shut up his trap and go on about his business, he might grow up and amount to something someday. Unfortunately, the chances of that happening didn't look too good.
How about it, Jensen? You willing to test your speed against a real fast draw?
The four men who had come into Longmont's with him had ambled over to the bar and ordered beers. They nursed the mugs while watching their partner confront Smoke. They didn't show any signs of wanting to take a hand in whatever play the redhead made, but Smoke knew better than to ignore them. Fortunately, Smoke also knew he could count on Lewis to keep an eye on the men. Johnny McVeigh, behind the bar, had a sawed-off greener handy on a shelf under the hardwood, too. Between the two of them, those four strangers wouldn't stand a chance if they tried to horn in. Smoke still hoped he could head off trouble.
I'm not going to draw on you.
And I'll have to shoot you down like the dirty yellow dog you are.
That's enough, Fletch.
One of the men set down his half-empty beer mug and stepped away from the bar. The redhead stiffened. With a grimace, he looked over his shoulder at the man.
You stay out of this, Coolidge. It ain't any of your business.
The boss told me to keep an eye on you boys. That makes it my business.
I've been waiting for a chance like this. Chance to prove how fast I really am.
A chance to die, you mean? You're not in the same league as Jensen.
I killed Hank Wilton in Tuscosa.
Hank Wilton was done as a fast gun 3 years ago. My 80-year-old grandma could have beaten him to the draw that day you faced him.
That's a blasted lie. Wilton was still quick on the draw.
Not quick enough. Come on over and have a drink with the rest of us. Then we'll head back to the herd.
Smoke noted that the man named Coolidge was somewhat older than the others, in his late 20s maybe. A dark-haired man with a lean, hard-planed face and dark, observant eyes. He was a tad below medium height, and his body was wiry. If Smoke had had to pick out the most dangerous one in the bunch, It would be Coolidge. Fletch was all bluster, although bluster could be dangerous too if it was reckless enough. And Fletch just might fit that bill. The mention of a herd caught Smoke's attention too. He wasn't aware that any of the ranchers in the valley were putting together a herd to drive to market. It was the wrong time of year for that. It stood to reason that the cattle these newcomers handled were freshly arrived in the area as well.
There'll be time for a drink once I've shown the world that I'm quicker on the draw than the famous Smoke Jensen. Then folks will be talking about me when the subject of fast guns comes up. Gib Fletcher, he's the fastest one of all, they'll say. Maybe they'll even write some of them dime novels about me.
Smoke's patience for the youngsters' yammering ran out. He wore crossed gun belts with a Colt 45 holstered on each hip. He flicked his right hand down toward the gun butt on that side. Fletch saw that and his eyes widened. He'd been standing tensely ready to make his move, shoulders hunched, head forward a little, eyes peeled for even the smallest motion Smoke might make. When Smoke's right hand jerked, Fletch's right hand dived for his gun, and a look of mingled fear and excitement lit up his sunburned face. Before Fletch could clear leather, Smoke took a quick half step forward and smashed his left fist into the middle of his face, flattening his nose and pulping his lips. Fletch flew backward into Coolidge. Coolidge caught him, probably out of instinct and self-preservation. If he hadn't, Fletch would have crashed to the floor. The young cowboy's gun had slipped back into its holster when Smoke hit him.
You best take the Colt away from him while you've got the chance.
The other three strangers had stepped away from the bar and were watching with intense interest, but none of them had made a move to pull iron. More than likely, they had seen the smooth, unhurried way Lewis Longmont had stood up and moved the tail of his coat aside so that his gun was clear. Menace seemed to crackle in the air around the gambler. Coolidge kept his left arm around Fletch's waist. Fletch's head swung slowly, ponderously from side to side, as if he were only half aware what was going on around him.
That's probably a good idea, Mr. Jensen.
With his right hand, Coolidge motioned to his other three companions, tamping down the air to tell them not to start anything. Then, he used the same hand to pluck the undrawn and unfired revolver from Fletch's holster and shove it into the waistband of his trousers.
I'm obliged to you for not killing this young jackass.
Too many young men have died from being jackasses. Came close to it myself a time or two. But it's not a very good reason for dying.
No, sir, it ain't.
Coolidge turned the groggy Fletch and gave him a shove that sent him stumbling toward the other three cowboys, who grabbed him and kept him from tripping and falling. Coolidge turned back to Smoke and extended his hand.
Matt Coolidge.
Smoke Jensen. But I reckon you probably figured that out.
Fletch is the one who recognized you, but I've heard of you, sure enough. I'm the ramrod of the Triangle B outfit. We just threw our herd onto the bed ground north of town. And we've been on the trail long enough, I figured the boys deserve some time off. They'll be taking turns coming into town, four or five at a time, so there won't be enough of them at one time to get too rambunctious.
That's not a bad idea. You might want to check in with our local sheriff, Monte Carson, though, and let him know what you're doing.
The sheriff's office was going to be my next stop.
No need for that. Here's Monte now.
Lewis nodded toward the door. The lawman wasn't running as he came into the room, but he wasn't wasting any time either, and he had a double-barreled shotgun held firmly in his capable hands. He slowed as he saw that no trouble was going on at the moment.
I gave the high sign to one of the girls to slip out and fetch Monty when it appeared as if that young firebrand wasn't going to be dissuaded from drawing on you, Smoke.
Monty came up and nodded to Smoke and Lewis. All three were old friends that had been part of a violent ruckus when Big Rock was founded to replace the outlaw town of Fontana a few years ago. Smoke and Monty had been on opposite sides in that fight at first, but that hadn't lasted long once Monty realized he'd backed the wrong play.
Heard there was about to be a shootout, so I figured you'd be right in the middle of it, Smoke.
I didn't think you knew I was even in town today.
Doesn't matter. Guns start going off, I figure Smoke Jensen has to be around somewhere close by. But looks like the trouble's all over.
Well, there wasn't much trouble. Nobody even died.
Well, that's a welcome change.
You fellas are joshing with each other, right?
Oh, mostly. I don't believe we've met. Monty Carson, Sheriff of Big Rock.
I'm Matt Coolidge, the foreman of the Triangle B crew.
We weren't formally introduced either. I'm Lewis Longmont. This is my establishment.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Longmont. Mighty nice place you got here.
Triangle B? I don't think I heard of that spread.
We just pulled in today. Drove 800 head up here from the Panhandle down in Texas.
800 head? Where are you planning on putting them?
Right now? They're grazing just north of town. Reckon we should have asked you first if that was all right, Sheriff. My apologies.
Oh, that's fine. Shouldn't cause a problem. But you can't leave them there.
Never plan to. First thing in the morning, we'll drive them on out to the spread the boss bought. I wasn't sure exactly how long it'd take to get there, so I thought we'd play it safe and lay over one more night before finishing the drive.
You're talking about the old Hunsacker place.
It does seem like I've heard that name. That's what's going to be known as the Triangle B from now on.
I've heard rumors that Linus Hunsacker's widow sold out to somebody from back east. Never bothered checking it out with the county clerk because I knew we'd find out sooner or later.
That'd be my boss, Mr. Thaddeus Bolden. He bought the ranch from the old lady and the 800 head from one of those big outfits in the Panhandle to stock it with. From what I understand, there wasn't much left of the herd that had been on the place.
No. Linus let it dwindle down more and more the worse his health got. He had a good crew, but he was one of those fellows who couldn't stand for anybody else to be out working him on his spread if he wasn't right there with them, doing his part. He probably didn't have more than 70 or 80 head left when he passed. I think Mrs. Hunsacker was moving back to Kansas City to live with her sister.
You sound like you know the place well, Mr. Jensen.
Oh, I ought to. Linus Hunsacker was my neighbor for several years. Part of his range adjoined mine.
Is that so? I reckon we'll be neighbors then. Which makes me even happier that you didn't put a bullet through old Fletch there. That wouldn't have been a very good foot to start out on.
I take it that's the near gunfight I heard about?
Yes, another young would-be pistolier full of himself and flushed with self-confidence because he hadn't managed to get himself killed yet.
The same sort you've had to deal with over and over again.
Unfortunately, yes. But I was able to bust him in the snoot instead of drilling him.
I appreciate that. Less paperwork for me. The Undertaker might not be too happy about it if this peaceful trend keeps up, though.
That's one thing I don't believe we'll have to worry about. As you pointed out, Monty, things never stay peaceful around Smoke for very long.
Smoke frowned, but he couldn't exactly argue with the sentiment his old friend had just expressed, Steve. Gib Fletcher's nose was swollen almost twice its normal size already. His lips were bruised and bloody, and every time he took a sip of whiskey, it stung so much he winced. By morning, both eyes probably would be so blackened that he'd look like a raccoon. Fletch still believed he could hold his own with Jensen when it came to gun handling. But he had to admit the fella hit like the kick of a mule.
You're lucky Jensen just hauled off and walloped you one, Fletch. More than likely, he'd have killed you if he drew on you, just like he said.
Stocky, dark-haired Bart Hudson stood to Fletch's right at the bar. Hudson was one of Fletch's best friends, but he liked to pick at a man and rile him up. Thought it was funny. Fletch didn't see anything funny about what had happened here.
Finding out who's faster will just have to wait. But that day's gonna come. You can bet a hat on that, Bart.
No, thanks. If I'm gonna buy a new hat, I just assumed it was for myself, not you. But I don't figure I'd have to worry about that. And since you'd be dead, you couldn't buy me a new hat to pay off the bet. No, sir. That sounds like a losing proposition all the way around to me.
You think you're so blasted hilarious.
Fletch threw back the whiskey that was left in his glass and thumped the empty down on the bar. A glance over his shoulder showed him that Matt Coolidge was still talking to Jensen and those other two fellas.
Matt's supposed to be on our side. We ride for the same brand. Just look at him over there sucking up to Jensen like that. It's plumb disgusting, that's what it is.
Phil Armantrout leaned in on Fletch's left.
You'd best watch what you're saying, kid. You don't want to get Coolidge mad at you. He's got a mean streak. He don't show it very often, but when he does, well, it's devil take the hindmost then.
I ain't scared of Coolidge neither.
I ain't saying to be scared of him. Just be careful, that's all.
You want another shot of whiskey, Fletch?
Well, let's just go back to the herd. Some of the other boys will be wanting to come into town. They ought to have their turn.
Nate Kyle, standing on the other side of Armantrout, protested.
We've only had one drink. Haven't played any cards nor found any gals willing to have a good time with us. What kind of visit to town is that?
The ranch where we're going ain't so far away we can't ride into town once a week or so. It ain't like this'll be our only chance to cut loose our wolves. Fletch is right. Come on, let's go.
Y'all headed back to the herd?
That's right, Matt.
Send the next bunch in when you get there.
Sure will.
Fletch watched the little group from the corner of his eye as he shuffled out with the others. Jensen was just standing there, smiling a little, acting like nothing had happened, like he'd already forgotten all about Fletch. Fletch hadn't forgotten. No, sir, he hadn't, and he never would. Jensen might think he was the big skookum he-wolf of these parts, but it wouldn't always be that way. One of these days, there would be a reckoning, Fletch promised himself, and he would kill Smoke Jensen.
That young fella still looks pretty resentful.
Don't worry about him. He's a hothead, but I'll keep a tight rein on him until he cools down a mite.
I'd be obliged, despite what Monty and Lewis here make it sound like. I'm a peaceable man, and I like to stay on good terms with my neighbors.
This fella Bolton you ride for, did you say he comes from Texas?
I said he bought that 800 head in Texas. Mr. Bolton is from Nashville, Tennessee. He had himself a handful of successful businesses back there. He owned a hotel, a bank, a freight company, several mercantile stores, and a plantation where he and his family lived. But he sold them all to move out here, once he found a spread he wanted and some cattle to stock it with.
Well, why in the world would he do that? It sounds to me like he had a mighty good life back there in Tennessee.
I can't argue with that. But you see, Mr. Bolton always had it in his head he wanted to be a rancher, ever since he was a little boy. Once he had enough money, he made that dream come true. I reckon, if you have enough money, you can make just about anything come true.
That wasn't right, Smoke mused. Years earlier, he and the old mountain man Preacher had found gold on what eventually became the Sugarloaf Ranch. They could have been rich men, but all the gold in the world wouldn't have been enough to bring back his wife, Nicole, murdered by hired killers working for some of Smoke's enemies, nor their son, Arthur, slain by the same men. Smoke could even that score, at least the way most folks would see it, but it wasn't really even at all. Nicole and Arthur were still dead. But while he was avenging his wife and son, he had met Sally Reynolds, and she had taught him how to love again and move ahead in life. And because of that, he considered himself the luckiest man in the world. Bad memories faded and good memories lingered, and Smoke really was, as he said, a peaceable man, when people would allow him to be.
Mr. Bolton came down to the panhandle to settle the deal for the cows, and while he was there, he put together a crew to bring the critters up here to Colorado.
Ben, you haven't been working for him for a long time?
Nope, just a couple of months. Took us a little while to road brand all that stock, and then when we had the Triangle B iron on him, we headed him north, through Injun territory, and then west.
An easier route than cutting through New Mexico territory, and over Raton Pass. You can take cattle through there, but it's quite a climb.
Yes, sir.
Is your employer with you?
Yeah. Mr. Bolton went back to Tennessee from the Panhandle to fetch his wife and daughter, then they took the train to Cheyenne and traveled on from there by wagon. As a matter of fact, they caught up to us just yesterday. They were coming into town this afternoon, too. Ms. Bolton, she's got a hankering to spend the night in a soft bed under a roof, I think. You've got a hotel here in Big Rock, don't you?
We have a couple of good ones. Big Rock Hotel's probably the best.
Well, that's what she'd want. Nothing but the best for Ms. Bolden.
I hope they enjoy living here. As new arrivals to the area, I'd be happy to welcome them with a meal here on the house.
In a, saloon?
Oh, don't let that fool you. Lewis has the best cook you'll find in these parts. Folks in Big Rock and the rest of the valley know this is where you get the best eats.
Well, I'll pass that along. Don't be offended, though, if Miss Bolden decides she wants to dine somewhere a mite fancier.
No offense taken. And the offer stands.
Lewis took a silver dollar from his pocket and extended it.
If you'd be so kind as to pay your men back for those beers they bought, I'd like to buy a round for all the Triangle B men. First time they come in here.
Mighty nice of you. The boys will appreciate that. I'll let the rest of the crew know. I'd best be moving on. I wouldn't say the camp can't get along without me, but I like to keep an eye on things. It was a pleasure to meet you fellas.
Same here.
And again, I'm sorry Fletch had to go on the prod like that.
It happens with young men. To be honest, when a man rides for me, I'd like for him to have a little vinegar in him.
It comes in handy in times of trouble. So long.
Seems like a nice enough fella.
He's a killer.
What are you talking about?
You've lived in town too long, Monty. You've lost a little of your edge.
We've lived in Big Rock the same amount of time.
Yes, but you didn't notice that Coolidge's right hand never strayed very far from his gun.
Well, he shook hands with all of us. Which, come to think of it, means that our right hands were occupied too. I guess he was ready for trouble if any cropped up, but I'm not sure that makes him a killer.
That was in his eyes. But I have to agree, he was perfectly pleasant to talk to. I don't think he'd ever go hunting a showdown like that kid did, but he wouldn't back away from one either.
Ah, you're right, dang it. Both of you. I have lost my edge. That's a dangerous thing for a lawman to have happen. Maybe I ought to turn in my badge.
Now, don't be hasty. You've done a fine job as Sheriff, Monty. And I'm sure you'll continue to do so. I'd rather have you siding me in a fight than anybody else I can think of.
Well, almost anybody else if you're telling the truth. We all know who's the best hombre to have here beside you when the bullets start to fly.
Oh, I don't know about that. Remember, smoke attracts more of that hot lead than anyone else.
That's true.
There you two go again. I'd better head back to my ranch.
You never did say what brought you into town today.
Nah, nothing in particular. I just felt like getting out and taking a ride. Pearly has things running so smoothly on the ranch that it doesn't really matter if I'm around all the time.
Pearly's made you a good foreman.
That he has.
Like Monty, Pearly Fontaine had been a hired gun at one point in his life. Both men had worked for Tilden Franklin when Franklin tried to take over the valley some years earlier. Also like Monty, he had changed sides when he realized what a no-good skunk Franklin really was. Since then, he'd been a good friend to Smoke and the most valued member of his ranch crew.
I'll walk outside with you, Smoke. I ought to take this greener back to the office. Wasn't sure if I'd need it or not. Seriously now, Smoke, you reckon it's time I hung up my gun and resigned as sheriff? I mean, since I never pegged that fella Coolidge as a gunman.
Don't be loco. There's nobody better suited to be sheriff of Big Rock than you, Monty.
Yeah, but if I can't spot trouble coming before it starts, I may not be able to do my job.
Coolidge was pretty good at covering it up. Anyway, I have a hunch he actually is a pretty likable, reasonable fellow. He was doing his best to head off trouble and keep any gunplay from breaking out. Just because he's a bad man to cross doesn't mean he's going to go out of his way hunting trouble.
Sort of like you, eh?
I reckon you could say that.
All right, I can live with that. Hey, look there.
I see it.
Smoke gazed at a fancy buggy pulling up in front of the Big Rock Hotel. In the late afternoon light, Smoke could tell that a well-dressed man in a dark suit was handling the reins of the impressive-looking matched pair of black horses hitched to the buggy. A woman sat beside the man on the front seat. Smoke thought someone was riding in the back, too, but he couldn't make out any details at this distance.
You don't suppose that's the Bolton fella Coolidge was talking about, do you? I don't recognize that buggy or the driver.
Coolidge said they came down from Cheyenne in a wagon. More than likely, they didn't come alone, though. I can't see a rich man from back east doing that. Chances are they hired men to ride along with them. Then they could have bought a buggy in Cheyenne as well as a wagon.
Well, I'm still the sheriff, and they're strangers in town, so I reckon I have a right to go and welcome them to Big Rock and make sure who they really are.
Smoke was curious, too. So he sauntered along the street with Monty as the man at the reins brought the buggy to a neat stop next to the hitch rail in front of the hotel. The man stepped down from the vehicle with easy grace and agility and tied the reins around the rail. Then he turned back to the buggy and lifted his arms to help the woman disembark. Smoke and Monty were close enough now that Smoke could make out the man's handsome features. He had a deep enough tan that the white hair under his dark gray hat stood out in sharp contrast. It wasn't the white hair of an old man, though, Smoke realized. The newcomer might be middle-aged, but he was still vital and full of life. So was the woman who took the hands he extended to her as she stepped down from the buggy. She wore a dark blue traveling outfit and matching hat with a short, colorful feather attached to it. Blonde hair curled closely around her very attractive face. Gemstones glittered on the ring she wore. She gave off an air of sleek, well-bred beauty. So did the younger woman who stepped down from the buggy's rear seat. Smoke remembered Matt Coolidge saying that Thaddeus Bolton had returned to Nashville to fetch his wife and daughter. Smoke had a strong hunch that was who he was looking at now. The man and the two women went up the steps and onto the hotel porch as Smoke and Monty neared them.
Mr. Bolton?
The stranger paused. The women flanked him, the older one to his right, the younger one to his left. He had his hands lightly on their arms, guiding them toward the hotel's double-doored entrance. He stopped and let go of them so that he could turn to face Smoke and Monty. Now that they were closer, Smoke's estimate of the man's age was confirmed. Despite the snow-white hair, he was in his 40s, and no more than that.
Yes? What can I do for you?
Before Monty could introduce himself, the swift rataplan of hoofbeats made everyone turn and look along the street. Smoke spotted a rider galloping toward the center of Big Rock and recognized Matt Coolidge. At the same time, from the other direction...
Jensen! Damn your hide! You ain't gonna run away from me this time! Go for your gun!
Smoke swung around. Fletch stood about 50 feet away, shoulders hunched, right hand hovering claw-like over his Colt. The slur in his voice and the way he swayed a little told Smoke that he'd been drinking more since leaving Longmont's. But drunk or not, he was still a threat, as he proved when his hand jerked down, closed around the butt of his gun, and yanked the revolver out of its holster.
Fletch, no!
Fletch's gun had cleared leather, and the barrel was starting to tip up. Smoke's right hand was a blur as he drew the Colt on that side. Fletch's right arm jerked back. The gun flew out of his now useless fingers and thudded to the dirt on the street. He staggered a couple of steps to the side, instinctively clutching his wounded right arm with his left hand as he did so. The shock of being shot caused his knees to buckle. He dropped to him, and unable to hold himself up, pitched forward, twisting to land on his uninjured left side. Coolidge swept past Smoke on horseback and swung down in a running dismount while the animal was still moving. He stumbled, caught his balance, and knelt beside Fletch. Smoke and Monty walked up on Fletch's other side. Smoke hadn't pouched his iron yet, but he held it down along his leg and didn't point it at the wounded man. Monty bent to scoop up the gun Fletch had dropped in the dirt. Smoke relaxed then, thumbed a fresh round from one of the loops on his shell belt into the Colt's cylinder to replace the one he'd fired, and slid the gun back into leather.
You damn loco, kid, how bad are you hit?
The foreman expertly probed the wounded arm.
The bone's busted about halfway between the shoulder and the elbow. He won't be going around trying to prove he's a fast draw for a long time, if ever.
Well, we have a good doctor here in Big Rock. He can set that broken bone, and once it's healed up, kid ought to be able to still do his job on the ranch.
Yeah, in 6 weeks or a couple of months, that arm may not ever be quite the same. I've seen plenty of hombres who got busted bones from being tossed off Bronx, and that's the way it was for them. A bullet's even worse.
He shouldn't have drawn on smoke. You know, the boy started it. I could throw him behind bars once the doc's finished with him and charge him with disturbing the peace and endangering the citizens.
I'd be obliged to you if you didn't do that.
As far as I'm concerned, there's no need for that. The boy will heal up better in a bunkhouse than he would in a jail cell.
Well, since you're the one he was set on killing, I reckon I can go along with that.
I'm obliged to you, Mr. Jensen. You could have killed him, couldn't you?
He wasn't as fast as he thought he was. I couldn't have him spraying bullets all around the streets, though. Making it so that he couldn't do that seemed like a strong enough response.
Oh, young idiot. I didn't realize until I was back at camp that he'd slipped off from the others. When they told me they didn't know where he was, I figured he must have stayed in town to get liquored up more and to stir up more trouble. I rattled my hawks back here as fast as I could. Sorry I didn't make it in time to stop him.
The shooting had attracted plenty of attention. Not to mention Coolidge riding into town hell-bent for leather, and that had created a commotion, too. Monty called to one of the curious bystanders to fetch the doctor. The townsman hurried off to comply.
Sheriff, a word, please.
Thaddeus Bolton had left the hotel porch and walked up the street to join the small group gathered around the wounded cowboy. Smoke glanced past the newcomer and saw that the two women were still on the porch, watching intently.
This young man works for me. Are you going to arrest the man who shot him?
Arrest Smoke, you mean?
This man, whoever he is, the one who shot Mr. Fletcher.
Well, I don't know how close you were watching, but this puncher of yours drew first. Smoke would have been within his legal rights to kill him instead of just wounding him. That's what most fellas would have done.
I see. Did this man provoke the fight?
This man's got a name. It's Smoke Jensen. As a matter of fact, we're going to be neighbors, Mr. Bolton. I own the Sugarloaf Ranch.
Is that so? I apologize for jumping to hasty conclusions, sir. I know that disputes are often settled at gunpoint out here, and I wanted to be certain that my man was treated fairly. Thaddeus Bolton, at your service.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Bolton.
If what the sheriff says is true and my rider drew his weapon first...
Oh, it's true, all right.
What prompted him to do so?
He figured he was a fast gun and wanted to make a reputation for himself.
And he could accomplish that by killing you?
Smoke's one of the fastest guns out here on the frontier, or anywhere else for that matter. More than likely the fastest.
Then it was rather foolish for Fletcher to challenge you.
Most young men don't lack for self-confidence. Fletch here certainly doesn't.
The circle of men parted as the doctor bustled through to kneel beside Fletch and began examining his wounded arm.
I need to get this man back to my surgery so I can set his arm properly and prepare a cast for it.
I'm gonna have to wear a cast?
If you ever want to use that arm again properly, you will.
I'm sorry for letting things get out of hand, Mr. Bolton. I never figured Fletch would get such a burr under his saddle that he'd try to draw on Mr. Jensen here.
Just see to it that he receives proper medical attention and then gets back out to our camp all right. Will he be able to travel out to the ranch tomorrow?
You'd have to ask the doc to be sure, but I've got a hunch it'd be better for him to recuperate here in town for a few days before we try to move him.
So we'll be short-handed, is that what you're saying?
Only for a while, until Fletch heals up.
If you find yourself in a tight spot, Mr. Bolton, I could send one or two of my hands over to your place to help you out.
That's generous of you, Jensen. Mighty generous. Of course, considering that you're the one who broke his arm with a bullet.
It was either that or kill him.
Certainly. You did the only thing you could, and I appreciate your restraint. Now, if you'll come with me, I'd like to introduce you to my wife and daughter, seeing as we're going to be neighbors, after all.
Bolton slid a cigar out of his vest pocket and put it in his mouth without lighting it. Smoke didn't particularly like Thaddeus Bolton, even though the man was trying to be pleasant now. But he couldn't see any polite way of refusing the request. He fell in step beside Bolton as they headed for the Big Rock Hotel. Monty came along too, with the shotgun still tucked under his arm. The two women watched him approaching. The older one, Bolton's wife, looked intently at Smoke, regarding him with such open interest that it made him feel a little on edge. Bolton didn't seem to notice, though. The younger woman just looked bored, as if she wished she was somewhere else. The three men stepped up the steps to the porch.
My dear, allow me to introduce Mr. Smoke Jensen, and I'm sorry, Sheriff, I don't think I got your name.
Monty Carson.
Sheriff Monty Carson. Sheriff Carson is the local law, of course, and Mr. Jensen is going to be our neighbor. He owns the, what was it, the Sugarloaf Ranch?
That's right.
Gentlemen, my wife Emmeline and our daughter Susanna.
Emmeline Bolton moved closer to Smoke and extended a slim, expensively gloved hand. She wasn't a tall woman, but the body in the blue traveling outfit was well curved and she had very blue eyes. She was a looker, all right, Smoke thought. Just the kind of wife a rich man like Thaddeus Bolton would have. Smoke took her hand. It would have been impolite not to.
Mr. Jensen, it's such a pleasure to meet you.
It's my pleasure, ma'am.
How could you do that? You shot poor Fletch. You could have killed him.
Susanna Bolton looked annoyed now, not bored. Smoke took the opportunity to let go of Emmeline's hand. She'd been clinging to his hand a mite longer than he was comfortable with.
I'm sorry, miss, but the fellow was trying to kill me. So shooting him seemed like the thing to do at the time.
He wouldn't have been able to hit you. He was drunk.
With my life on the line, not to mention the lives of other folks on the street, including you, who might have got in the way of a stray slug, I couldn't exactly count on that, could I?
Mr. Jensen is right, Susanna. I realized that once I stopped and thought about it. We actually owe Mr. Jensen our thanks. He prevented Fletcher from hurting anyone, and did so without killing the young fool.
Don't call him a fool, Father.
Judging by Susanna's chilly tone, Smoke thought she might be sweet on Fletch. That didn't really make sense, given the difference in their stations. Susanna was a rich man's daughter, and Fletch was a 40-a-month and found cowhand, and not a particularly handsome one at that. But if there was one thing love didn't have to do, it was make sense. Smoke wasn't all that old, but he was old enough to have figured that out. Mrs. Bolton somehow got in front of Smoke again.
I was so frightened there for a moment when it looked like there was going to be a killing right in front of our eyes. Is it always like that out here in the West?
Certainly not. The West is civilized now, isn't it, Sheriff?
Well, it sort of depends on what you call civilized. It can be, most of the time. But I'd say it's a long way from being completely tame.
You see, we shouldn't have come out here. It's a wilderness full of savage men.
I believe my husband said you own a ranch, Mr. Jensen.
That's right. It's called the Sugarloaf. In fact, this whole valley is known as the Sugarloaf Valley because of one of the mountains that flanks it.
Your ranch doesn't include the whole valley, though, does it? I mean, I was under the impression that the ranch Thaddeus bought is located here, too.
No, my ranch is just part of it. The whole valley would be a little too big for one man to keep up with.
But do you run your ranch all by yourself? Out there all alone?
No, ma'am. I have the best crew of cowboys any man ever asked for. And more than that, I have my wife, Sally.
Sally? Your wife?
That's right. I'm sure the two of you will get along just fine. In fact, when I tell her that you folks have taken over the old Hunsacker place, I'm sure she's going to want to have you come over for a visit and a big dinner.
That sounds wonderful. I look forward to it.
Is Fletch going to be all right?
Don't worry yourself about that young hothead.
From the way the doctor talked, he'll recover. If he's lucky, his arm will work as well as it did before. If he's smart, though, he won't go around trying any more fast draws. He's just not fast enough to be doing that.
We'd best be going in now. It's been a long day, and we all need to get some rest. And we don't need to keep you any longer, Mr. Jensen. I'm sure you want to get home.
Yes, home to your wife, Sally.
Welcome to Big Rock.
Susanna sniffed and walked through the door into the hotel lobby. Her mother followed her, and Bolton went last, pausing in the doorway to look back over his shoulder at Smoke.
I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of each other.
He went inside and closed the door behind him.
You know, I may be local, but something about the way he said that, it almost sounded like a threat.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
Sally reacted just the way Smoke figured she would when she found out they were getting new neighbors.
We'll have them over for dinner Saturday afternoon. We can make it a party for the hands and invite their whole crew, too.
The two of them were sitting on the ranch house porch, enjoying the evening air after supper. Smoke had a cup of coffee he was sipping. Sally had brought some needlework out with her to work on it in the light that spilled through the window behind her, but she hadn't actually done so yet. She probably wouldn't, because now she was occupied with making plans for the weekend festivities.
I'm sure they'd appreciate that. They've been on the trail for a while, and they'd probably enjoy a meal that wasn't fixed by a chuck wagon cook.
What are they like, the Boltons?
Well, they're Easterners.
Like my family?
Not exactly. The Boltons are from Tennessee, not from up in New England like the Reynolds. Tennessee's not exactly the frontier anymore, but it was not too many decades ago, in this century anyway.
So they're rugged?
The Boltons? No. No, I wouldn't say that. They're town folks. No doubt about that. I guess that living has always been pretty comfortable for them. I don't know anything about Thaddeus Bolton's background, though. He's been very successful in his business, but I don't know if he built it all from the ground up or inherited it.
Even when you inherit something, it takes some effort to keep it going.
It sure does. And Bolton struck me as a man who's not afraid to work. He's pretty brisk and businesslike.
What about his wife and daughter?
They're very attractive women. Mrs. Bolton looks some younger than her husband, but she's still a mature lady. Miss Bolton is probably around 20 years old, I'd say. Both of them are blondes, well-dressed, and they know how to wear good clothes.
So they're ornaments intended to make Mr. Bolton look good?
I don't know that I'd go so far as to say that. Both of them struck me as being a mite strong-willed. They're not the types to just stand around and look pretty, I don't think.
Oh, good. Perhaps I can be friends with them then.
I hope you will be. Oh, and one more thing. Mrs. Bolton has a little bit of a southern drawl. It wouldn't surprise me if she grew up on a plantation or something like that.
I'm looking forward to getting to know her. Smoke, do you think they're going to fit in here in the valley?
It's too soon to say. I don't know if they're really aware of what it's like to live on a ranch. But they're about to find out. And I hope they like it here.
I'll send someone over to the... What did you say the spread is going to be called? The Triangle B?
That's right.
I'll send someone over there tomorrow morning to invite everybody to the fiesta.
So, it's a fiesta now, is it?
Why not? Maybe I'll invite all the other ranching families in the valley, too. Oh, that way the Boltons could get acquainted with everyone at once. And it's been a long time since everyone in these parts got together.
That's true. All right, it sounds like a good idea. But you might want to give them at least a day to get settled in before you spring this on them. They're still in Big Rock tonight and won't even be on the ranch until sometime tomorrow.
Let's see. This is Monday. I suppose if I waited until Wednesday to send word, well, that would still allow enough time for the preparations. In fact, I could go ahead and start getting ready tomorrow, even though it wouldn't be official until the next day.
Yeah, you go ahead and do that.
I wonder if I should go myself, or if I should send someone. It might be better if I send someone. Then I can meet them for the first time here at home, where everything will be familiar and comfortable. Who do you think I should send?
Sounds to me like that would be a good job for Cal.
Do you think so? I was considering Pearly.
I need Pearly out on the range. Cal's a good hand, too. Don't get me wrong. He'll be a top hand one of these days. He's close to it now, but there's a reason Pearly's the foreman. He keeps things running smoothly around here.
Oh, you're right about that. As long as I keep him well supplied with bear sign, there's no one better than Pearly.
Cal can handle it, as long as he takes a good horse. He can make the rounds of the valley in a day and deliver all the invitations.
It's settled then. Fiesta this Saturday. Oh, it'll be a fine day.
Smoke hoped that she was right.